When did you start Scrimshaw? I mean, what really
Yeah.
inspired you?
Okay, I started in 78. I was selling pen and ink drawings and prints of my drawings, and a jeweler liked the drawings. I did it as a stippled style, the dots, in pen and ink. He says, "You ought to try Scrimshaw." So he gave me a, he cut a little cab of ivory, and my instructions were take a needle, scratch the ivory, and rub ink into it. I was inspired. I lived in Portland, near Portland, and a lot of the Scrimshanners from the Bellingham School had their work, you know, in the area and stuff, so I saw it. And I was inspired by those the greats from the that Bellingham School.
Oh, I'll have to look them up on the net to see what I've, I don't think I've
Yeah,
been there.
they used to have, they actually had almost like a factory, but sort of an institute of sorts. And I don't know, 10, 20 of them or so were working up there and trading their techniques back and forth, and they produced some of the most beautiful color masterpieces and stuff back then. I don't do the same kind of scrimshaw that Garbo does, or you know, these other people do. So if somebody wants some color flowers, you know, I send them to somebody else. If they
Oh
want
yeah.
colored wildlife, I send them somewhere else. So.
I remember there used to be a thing called scrimcon.com.
Don't know that.
No, it was I think it was an annual scrimshaw conference, and they held it in Hawaii, and they had some absolutely gorgeous work there. It was just phenomenal. They for some reason they stopped being on the net a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's funny I didn't hear about it. I went to actually a guitar sh or a music show here a couple weeks ago, the NAMM show, and somebody had mentioned that, and I said, yeah, I never heard of anything where there was a guild or a conference or anything like that. But, you know, hermit artists, I live alone.
So, what kind of tools do you use? Is there any particular make, or do you make your own, or?
I just recently bought some scribe points from this machinist called Coulter, Coulter, back in the Midwest somewhere. Makes fantastic carbide scribe points. For my really fine ones, I make them myself out of, I think some of them are made out of piano wire, of all things, some
Oh.
tempered piano wire. And Dremel burrs, broken Dremel burrs, I will use those as scribe points. But I'd say, you know, probably 80% I just make myself. The other 20, I buy some of those good carbide ones.
So you use the actual shaft itself from the broken burrs from the Dremels, or?
Exactly.
Ah.
Exactly. And then sharpen them with the, I don't know if you know the technique where you have one Dremel tool, like tool with a disc on it, sanding disc or stone, and then you use a second Dremel to hold the burr and bring the two together, and you can get a perfectly conical point
Oh,
that way.
interesting. No, I'd never heard of that. I'll have to.
Yeah, a jeweler showed me that one.
Oh, that's
Very
great.
slick.
What materials do you use? Mammoth ivory or tagua
Yeah,
nut?
I never use tagua nuts. I think they're kind of oily and don't. I see no point in it because ivory is not so expensive that what I use. So yeah, I use a lot of mammoth. I use some fossil walrus, a fair amount of pre-ban ivory. I like micarta. Corian, I think, is a great substitute, although it's hard to find that ivory color. And some of the artificial ivories, although. I think I've had my best results with simply with micarta and the corian for substitutes, which I sometimes use.
What's a favorite theme that inspires you the most to commit to ivory?
Yeah, I like, I'd say first is portraits and figures. I love doing technical stuff like old cars and, I mean, I've done cars, guitars, buildings, ships, although, ships are not my favorite. I've done so darn many of them. I like working sometimes from the old masters, you know, Da Vinci drawings and stuff like that, and some of the great romantic painters of the 19th century and stuff. But if I were just going to sit down and do something, I would probably do a nude or a portrait.
Do you actually make a living with your art?
Well, a living or a good living. Yeah. Yeah, I started Scrimshaw full time in about 95, and have although I occasionally do some drawing and other design work, Scrimshaw has been my living for those 15 years, the past 15 years.
And that, do you do shows as well, or?
You know, I used to do more shows. These days, I do the Oregon Knife Show. Have done that for 20 years probably, and I used to go to things like the Las Vegas Classic Knife Show, but I occasionally attend shows. I go to a international Q collector show, the Q Stick Collectors. I do a fair amount of work on Q Sticks. I just recently came from the NAMM show, which is the music market show, the largest show for marketers in music. And I'll be working with Martin Guitars and Santa Cruz Guitars and Galetta Guitars. But most of my work, let's see, I would say is split between repeat customers and what comes in from my website, the scrimshander.com.
Hmm. For a beginning scrimshander, where would you recommend they find materials to use?
Yeah, you know, you can go to things like the Gem and Mineral shows or go to knife shows. Like the Oregon Knife Show, there's at least three or four, maybe up to ten people selling ivory.
Wow.
I mean, look, I could go broke just buying ivory at shows like that.
Oh, yeah.
So, just, you know, keep your eyes open. I would say, really, for beginners, they might work on micarta until they feel comfortable, but I do teach, to answer your next question, I teach and... you know, sometimes small classes, sometimes just one-on-one. And I recommend people start with ivory because if you're working on a material that has a different feel to it, then you go to ivory, you think, oh, why didn't I start with ivory? Or, you know, this is much easier, or much harder.
Yes,
and
true.
If you're going to end up with ivory, I would say, you know, get some old piano keys or something like that, elephant ivory piano keys, and work on something like that.
Yeah, sometimes I know that the ivory piano keys are hard to find. They don't sell them. They used to be a staple on eBay, but eBay stopped selling all ivory.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how I would find them, but I, you know, years ago I bought a bag of probably 300 or 400 piano keys. Occasionally I'll sell them, you know, give them or sell a few to students and stuff. And these days I got so much ivory, you know, piled up. I'm always looking for large mammoth ivory, but as far as elephant and fossil walrus and stuff like that, I've just got so many small pieces that I don't know if I'll ever use them all.
Yeah. What's your favorite piece to date, and what was it that makes it so memorable to you?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure some people could answer this, but I do have a favorite, and it's, I did an iguana. The largest display piece, probably, 3 by 5 inches, something like that, on mammoth ivory. If you wanted to see it, it's on bobhergert.com. And it, I use it on my desktop, on my laptop computer.
Oh, really? Let's see. What's the most difficult piece you've ever done?
Can I continue answering that last question, though, about my favorite?
Sure.
Why it's my favorite?
Oh, yes, yeah, the iguana, yes, definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was looking at my laptop one night in bed, and I was too tired to do anything, and I was staring at that picture, and I thought to myself, I didn't really believe I had done it. It totally mesmerized me. It has a real elaborate border, and the iguana just seems to be alive and is sort of jumping out of the frame of the piece. And then it sort of dawned on me that, you know, this is what inspiration is, that it's... it does come from outside you in a way, and comes through you. And so I like I say, it was almost too good a piece for me to think I did it myself. That's why it was my favorite. It is my favorite.
Yeah. Now, do you still have that, or is that in a private collection? I remember.
Somebody bought it. And half the time, I can't remember who bought it, but. It's out there somewhere.
I'm glad you still have a picture of it, because that is wonderful.
Yeah, I got a good picture.
Yeah, I like the way that you tend to, you break through the frame on a lot of your pieces. That really adds
Yeah,
depth
you
to
know,
it.
I don't know why I did that initially, but it just sort of came to me, and I do it on, you know, virtually everything I do these days. I try and have the, you know, portraits, I'll put a border around them that intersects the, sort of through the person or whatever. Not every piece, some have a more traditional border, but very often I do that with figures especially.
So what, getting back to the other question here, what was the most difficult piece you've ever done? And what was the most challenging piece?
I've had a couple. You know, I've actually had a lot. Some portraits are extremely difficult at small size. And especially portraits of children who have, you know, no wrinkles in their face. Technically, most difficult, gosh. You know, it's kind of funny. Things that were really, really, you know, hard were such a pleasure to do that it's almost, you know, I can't even say they were difficult. It was very challenging on some. I did a thing called Cape Town Morning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's again, it was a fairly large piece, maybe 3 by 4 inches, but you know, it had figures in it that were, you know, the size of pinheads that actually you could see their face, had features on their face and stuff. So that had a degree of difficulty that was very high. But actually, to be quite honest, the portraits are the most difficult for me. One, you know, millimeter off, and the person is cross-eyed, or you know, has a, you know, big, you know, hole in their mouth or tooth or something like that. So the portraits always continue to be the most difficult and most challenging for me.
Yeah, I'm planning on trying my hand at a portrait finally in the coming months. Here, we'll see how things go.
Yeah, well, now you're forewarned.
Yes,
I've done 1,000 portraits, you know, and the next one is just as hard, I think, sometimes as the first one.
Oh gosh! Now, can people actually see your artwork in person, or do you have a shop?
You know, I work out of my home, as a lot of us do, and everybody is welcome. Occasionally, I have people, you know, pass through. I live in a tiny town in Oregon, on the Oregon coast, that. I'll have people stop by and say, hey, you know, I'm going to pass through Port Orford in January or February. Are you going to be around? Yeah, I'll be around.
Hmm.
So I love to show my pieces.
Ah, that's great. Whose work do you admire the most? Is it Scrimshaw, painting, photography, is something else?
Yeah. I have some favorite Scrimshanders. I have, you know, several of them. Recently, I've been working with guitar inlay artists, and sort of associating with. There's an inlay artist called Harvey Leach that I'm going to work with, who I think is the best inlay artist in the world. He and Larry Robinson. It's something I sort of could do if I put my mind to it, but I don't have 20 years to devote to it like they have, or 20 or 30 years to get as good as they are. I used to love Rick Field's work. Unfortunately, he died a few years back as a Scrimshander. And painters, gosh, I mean, I could go on, you know, name a dozen painters that inspire me. And, you know, I'll see people sometimes, engravers, generally I see engravings and knives and stuff like that. It's just is phenomenal work. For me, unfortunately, the names often escape me. If somebody reminds me who they are, then I say, yeah, that's who I love so much. But, my sources of inspiration, they pound on me, you know, every day, it seems. I'll hear something or see something that just knocks me out. And so that list is way too long to narrow down.
You can usually find Scrimshaw on jewelry, also on knives. Where else can people do Scrimshaw?
At the knife shows, I'd run into the collectors' wives and stuff who also wanted jewelry, and then let's say things like boxes, you know, little inlaid boxes.
Mm.
Then I just happened to meet a guy that made guitars, and at a night at the Oregon Night Show of all places.
Huh.
So next thing I know, I get this call from Eric Galletta that worked with Wayne Charvel, and I'm starting doing guitars with him. And that was probably 15 years ago, 20 years ago even. And so gradually I did that. At a Bay Area Knife Collector show, I ran into a Q-stick maker. So I did a Q-stick, and then that slowly evolved. So Q-sticks are a big business because they're very large amounts of ivory to scrimshaw.
Oh, yeah.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, plus you've got this a round piece that you're usually working on, something that's so
right.
curved that you have to think about, okay, is this going to be going... You know, there's got to be a start and an end point, but how am I going to meld that all together? Oh, God.
Yeah, it's difficult. It is difficult to make the scene make sense as it goes around. And luckily, you know, not luckily, but you just choose things that you know are going to work. You know, I did some of the larger cues projects I've done. One had medieval dragon scene with, you know, knights and maidens.
Yes.
Then I did a Chinese dragon with the great, you know, little embellishments of like the Great Wall and, you know, the terracotta soldiers and stuff like that. We'll be doing the third one of that series. We'll have St. George and the dragon. Also did a Lord of the Rings theme cue, which was pretty spectacular and very difficult because of it, you know, working in the round on that one. And a few odds and ends, you know, sometimes it's just people's crests and pictures of pool players or portraits. I do Q-stick caps. You know, these are very, very specific things, but, you know, they're good business for me.
Yeah.
And you know, still do a fair number of knives and the guitars and guitar picks and, you know, accoutrements, I guess, are what they're called, and the appurtenances on guitars, the knobs. Press rod covers and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So that's where I am today.
Yeah.
You have one about my average time spent on a piece.
Yes, that's what I was curious about.
Yeah, I can, the very first time I worked under a microscope, I put about 40 hours in a piece that's the size of your little fingernail.
Oh my gosh.
Generally, when I calculate how much something will take, if I have a square inch, I figure one day for a square inch. So if I'm looking at 3 square inches, it'd probably be 3 days work.
And do you take frequent breaks, or
yeah, every 5 minutes.
That's a good idea. Yeah, I find I get, you know, immersed in it, and just time just flies by, and suddenly the kids.
You want it to?
Yeah, the kids are coming home. And
how long have you been doing scrimshaw?
Oh gosh, I've been doing scrimshaw since about 1980. Off
okay,
and on.
Yeah, about the same as me. And it used to be, I don't know if it was because of my a change in my character or what, but I used to sit for, you know, stand and work, but, you know, for hours it seemed like, and then, oh, I'd have to break away for dinner or something. And these days, you know, I'll work 5, 10, 15 minutes and go play my guitar for 15 minutes and come back and, you know, scrimshaw for 15 minutes and, you know, just jump back and forth. And,
yeah.
I think one thing that has changed about me is, first of all, I'm a lot faster than I used to be. And I'm more confident, which has given me speed. And when I sit down to do a piece, I'm pretty sure I know exactly where I'm going to, you know, poke my dot. And so I attack it with, as I say, confidence. And so what used to take me, 10 hours, I might be able to do in 2 or 3 hours now. And, you know, you lessen perhaps the number of mistakes you make, or you minimize the number of mistakes. And so you're not bothering to correct and, oh, I did it too dark here, I got to lighten it up, or, you know, stuff like that. So,
that's a question I have for you, too. if you find that you've gotten a place that's too dark, I usually do a linear thing rather than stippling. But how do you usually lighten an area?
Well, two things I'll do. And it happens a lot in portraits, you know, say if I get around the nose too dark, I just have to darken the whole area around it and make it, you know, lessen the contrast, which takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
In a real severe case, you know, I used to joke that you know, I don't usually make mistakes by, you know, hitting things too hard, because I'm very, very careful. But it used to be my dog would bark or something. I'd jump, and then I'd have this big scratch in the middle of a face or something. So there are two ways I correct a big mistake. Like, it's, you know, sometimes I'm careless, I put a scratch right through a face. I'll go in with my little Dremel tool and a cotton buff, and I'll buff it out, and then, you know, I'll have to redo the whole area. If it's just one, like a tiny dot or something, sometimes I'll just go in with, you know, a light-colored paint, or I will actually chip out the, I use oil paint, I'll chip out the paint that's in the scratch and, you know, hope it never fills up again, or fill it with something, you know, very carefully, like the ivory-colored paint.
Well, that's interesting. I've never thought of that. I've always gone in and just very lightly lifted out the... I use India ink, so I go in with a point and just kind of lightly lift it out and make sure I don't recover the area again.
I would, you know, this is... I'm not trying to be whatever, but really you ought to try oil paint. I'm going to tell you technically why I think it's so superior. Is that when you put the ink on there, it covers, blackens the whole surface, and you got to moisten a, you know, toilet paper or something like that, right, to wipe it off?
Or just a burnish with a piece of cardboard. That's the way I learned. A piece of corrugated cardboard. I fold it in half and then fold it in quarters and then just rub like crazy.
What happens is, of course, when you're doing that, you're also you know, you tend to polish the surface slightly. Each time you do that.
That's true.
And in a microscopic level. But with oil paint, see, it doesn't dry on the surface. It takes sometimes 2 or 3 days to dry. And so you can leave it, you can leave a thin film. You can, it's sort of messy, you know, but sort of, so is ink. But, you know, that paint also has body to it. So it fills the scratch with, you know, you just like, almost like a putty. Whereas ink, you know, tends to be very thin in there. And I remind people that although we do have drawings, not very many pen and ink drawings from, you know, 500 years ago, we have oil paintings that, you know, 500, 1,000 years old and have held up quite well. And so I think for permanency, oil paint is far superior also.
I was figuring that the, you know, the acid, kind of, that's in the, some of the inks would kind of bite into it a little more, but you're right. I mean, history has shown that. I mean, there's
Look, a lot of people like inks. You get used to working with something, but I started out with inks, and I'm not sure when I went to oil paint. I actually, believe it or not, use I still use inks once in a while. For color work, I'll use a Sharpie pen, fine point pen can get in there. You know what Prismacolor pencils are?
I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're kind of a high-quality, color waxy kind of pencil. I will use those. When I started working with engravers on guitars, and engravers have these engravers crayons. They're basically like, they're a crayon, but they're, you know, heavy, deep pigment, quality pigment. And in things like mother of pearl, you can't rub ink, you can't rub oil paint into it. So you take these crayons in your engraved mother of pearl, for example, and you rub it in there real hard, and then it'll wipe off the surface, and it'll leave that waxy, thick wax in the scratches on engravings. And so Prismacolor is kind of like that. And I don't know if you've ever seen those pencils that will draw on glass.
Oh, yeah.
You ever sketch with those?
China markers?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Those actually fill Scrimshaw scratches very well. So I use all the variety of things. I use ink, pencil, crayon, and oil paint. And when I in my as I made my rounds, I don't know if you ever knew Rick Fields. He was huge in the knife field and very expensive. He was top scrimshander among knife people. When I met him. And there's a funny saying that when art critics get together, they talk about composition and, you know, color color control and palette and all that stuff. When painters get together, they talk about the cost of turpentine. and it's really true. If every scrimshander I meet, the first thing we usually ask is, how much you charge and how do you charge? And, you know, so money's always a concern. But then immediately after that, saying, you know, what are you using for tools and what are you using for pigments? Hmm. And so I know a lot of the great color scrim sanders, they will use things like oil paint and toothpicks to apply their colors.
Wow.
And sometimes their tools that they scrimshaw, they'll put a tiny dab of paint or ink. And there's, you know, it's like 50-50. Half the people still use India inks and, you know, good quality colored inks. And, you know, the other half, I think, are using oil paint.
Yeah. I've got it back in my if I wasn't tethered to this wire, I'd be able to run back and grab it. But there were at one of the art stores there was a pen. It was almost like a pencil, but it was all oil-based paint, and I had tried using that on Taguanut because I was having problems with the porosity of the
right,
stuff.
Right.
It just soaked right into it. It was terrible. But one other thing I found was there's a I think it's Pentel makes a very fine nibbed pen that has almost a brush tip on it.
Yeah,
it worked.
Yeah,
really
I know those
well.
Exactly.
Yeah
look, I've done. I haunt the art stores when I go into them. I look at everything that will possibly make my work easier.
Yes.
So I've tried every brand of pen, pencil, oil paint, printer's ink, all this stuff. And, you know, now I generally work in black and white, so I just simply have a high-quality, Grumbacher, Graham oil paint, and I'm satisfied mostly with that for the black and white.
Have you ever tried lamp black the way they did way back in the day?
Yeah, I actually made some lamp black one time just to see how it works. But basically, lamp black is black oil paint, linseed oil and carbon.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was okay. It just, for the fun of doing it and just to see what the old sailors and guys use, I made some.
Yeah. I haven't quite gotten to that point yet. I'm thinking about it at some point, but I've got enough messy things with cars and everything else that I'm working on.
Yeah, you know, like I say, I'm a total experimenter.
Oh,
and
that's great.
And that's why, I don't know if you know I have that how-to video.
Yes, that's up on your site there.
You know, I recommend it for everybody, and it's not that I know more than anybody else, but like I say, I you can learn from a beginner. They say, have you ever tried this? I thought, I've never tried that.
Yeah.
You know, and this is a guy that just, you know, a student that's doing scrimshaw for a week or something. So, yeah, I have a pretty good technique of getting images down on ivory and saves me a lot of time, and it would behoove anyone, I think, that, if you're going to spend, 8, 10, 100 hours working on scrimshaw, and you can save yourself 10 hours, or a percentage of that time, small investment for a video is a good idea. Luckily, I'm one of those guys that can work at home and don't have to... depends. My market is worldwide, and so I can be anywhere in the world.
That's great.
I made it quite a few years ago now, and I have updated some of my information, but I did that on separate sheets of paper, which would serve well. There's a couple mistakes in it, not too many, but I just think I having heard from, and I think I don't know how many I've sold over the years, 1,000 of them or something like that, or 800. I've had a couple complaints out of that percentage, and a lot more compliments saying, "Oh, I never knew this," or "I thank you so much. I've watched it, and each time I learn something, I think, wow, really." So I'm confident that you'll get something out of it that you didn't know before.
Oh, that's great. I'm looking forward to it already.
Great.
So
I was
curious. Would you be able to send me a picture of your studio if you have? I mean, do you actually have a studio?
Yeah. Yeah, would you do me a favor and
sure.
To remind me when I send a disc? I'll also send. In fact, I think I have. I'll have a picture disc that I'll send with it. But I'll send a separate one that has, some pictures of me working in the at my table and, just my work area.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
And oddly and interestingly enough, I have. I did one of these 360-degree pictures where it plays like a little movie in It's not really by the studio where I work. Well, it is the studio where I work. I did work at the time, so that's on my picture disc. So when you send your, you write me, I'll put all these things in the mail to you, and you'll have more than you thought.
Okay, that'd be great. Hey, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Well, you know, I've never talked to a scrim shander that I haven't enjoyed it. And, you know, I'm serious, and I mean that seriously, and, you know, there aren't that many of us, first of all. But, you know, scrimshaw is a pretty weird way to make a living and profession, and, you know, it takes pretty nutty people, and they got to be dog lovers and love the living outside the normal society. So here we are. All right. So, hey, you call any time.
Okay.
Hey, Andrew, it's been a great pleasure.
Hey, it's been a pleasure for me, too.
All right. We thank each other, don't we?
Oh, indeed. Thanks again. You take
care. All right. You take care.
Thanks. See you. Bye-bye now.